This week on the Breezy Breakfast Radio Hour, we hear from Guelph's Chief Returning Officer, Stephen O'Brien. He gives us a refresher on the basics of municipal elections. We'll learn about accessible voting technology, the storage and counting of mail-in ballots, and what happens after the polls close on October 24th. How the voters' list is generated is also a hot topic of discussion, as is the enfranchisement of people with no fixed address. You will learn everything you wanted to know about Guelph's municipal election but were afraid to ask.
All right, hello everyone. It's Thursday, October the 6th, and the municipal election is only 18 days away. Today we'll find out what's new in 2022. As we gather, we are reminded that Guelph is situated on treaty land that is rich with Indigenous history and home to many First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people today. We are meeting on the traditional lands of the Anishinaabeg and Haudenosaunee people and the treaty lands of the Mississaugas of the Credit. We acknowledge that these peoples have lived and continue to live in kinship with this land, which is governed by the Dish with One Spoon Covenant. This covenant is a peace agreement made between Indigenous nations, and it outlines our collective responsibility to each other and to Mother Earth. For tens of thousands of years across Turtle Island, Indigenous people have been managing the land, water, and wildlife responsibly by making decisions that take the long view of seven generations into the future. All decisions made today must include everybody who lives here. We must know the truth of the past in order to make decisions that result in a better future. And we must do everything that we can to right the past wrongs committed against Indigenous peoples. When we cast our votes, we should keep the seven generation principle in our minds. And City Council in Guelph must do the same. Okay, so I'd like to welcome Stephen O'Brien, who is Guelph's Chief Returning Officer. He's going to give us a brief refresher on municipal elections before letting us know what is new in 2022. And if you have any questions, please put them in the chat. Stephen, over to you.
Great, thanks, Tanya. Great to be here, thanks so much. Always fun to join community groups like this and share some good information about what's coming on October 24th. Actually, what I should say is what's coming this weekend is because it's the first advanced polls open up this weekend. So the team is very busy. Tanya, when Tanya and I were chatting, she mentioned that many of you were attending the Guelph Wellington Social Justice Committee a couple of weeks back. So I don't want to spend a lot of time on this sort of things that I had chatted about before. Tanya was kind enough to offer some suggested topics and talking points that I think might be of interest to folks. So what I'll do is I'll jump right in. I'll share a little bit about what's coming. I do like to get the basics sort of out of the way, although I suspect this group is pretty well informed in those, but nonetheless worthwhile. So really quickly, I think everyone knows in order to vote, 18 years of age, Canadian citizen, and that's a Canadian 18 years of age as of the 24th of October. And a resident of Guelph or an owner of or tenant of property in Guelph or the spouse of such an owner or tenant of property. So that's the real basics. Where you can vote 8th, 9th, and 10th of October, 14th, 15th, and 16th of October. This coming weekend, which is the 8th, 9th, and 10th, we have a location dedicated at City Hall. We're offering some specialized service there, which I can cover off. And then on the 14th, 15th, 16th, we've got a location in each of the city's wards. You can vote at any of those locations in the city's wards on that weekend. And then, of course, we've got the big day on the 24th in a few weeks' time. I think everyone knows, I believe, advanced voting and the election day voting is very similar to what individuals have seen in the past. Paper ballots, we use a tabulating equipment to help us count the ballots. I'll get into why that's really important and why that's very different than federal and provincial elections. And then the other method we have is vote by mail, which is running from the 12th of September to the 14th of October. So the time to window to register for vote by mail is closing shortly. If you're at all considering vote by mail, now is the time to get onto guelph.ca/vote and request a vote by mail kit, register for that vote by mail kit, because it certainly gives us a little bit more time to get things packaged up. And what we worry about is as we get closer to the end of that window, that October 14th window, it's a bit of a crunch time. And I always worry that are we going to get it out in time, which we will, but are we going to get it back in time? Because we're beholden in that situation to our good friends at Canada Post. So those are the sort of methods and how you can vote. What I want to talk about, Tanya, is a topic that you shared, or that you said the group would be interested in. I'm going to try and get my video back on here in case we can do that. And you can let me know again if the audio falters a bit again. What I want to talk about is some of the assistive voting devices that we have. So we spend a lot of energy and a lot of effort to ensure that the city's election is accessible to voters. And that's both accessible from sort of the broader accessibility standpoint. I talked about the vote anywhere within the city on election day, or sorry, on the advanced poll weekend, and vote anywhere within your ward on election day. But we also take a lot of effort to make sure the election is accessible to voters and persons with disabilities. And so our equipment that we use that I mentioned before, the tabulating equipment, that's a tool for us to navigate the complexity of what is a municipal ballot. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a moment, as I said. But it also allows us to add in and layer in assistive technologies for persons with disabilities. So what we can do is we can connect what we call an audio tactile interface, or an ATI device. The ATI device is a handheld box. I'm a product of the 80s and 90s. It was like a Game Boy, you know, that your kids may have used to play one of those Game Boy devices, sort of a handheld device. And the device has large format, high contrast buttons with corresponding Braille text. And that handheld device, we plug headphones in and the voter wears a set of headphones. And it allows an audio ballot to be read to the elector over those heads, over that headset. And then subsequently they can mark their ballot following the audio prompts using that handheld device. And so that's a fantastic tool for us, for persons that might not be able to navigate a ballot on their own independently. They can still come in and do that using the ATI and the headset equipment. For persons with even sort of greater limitations in their physical mobility, we have the opportunity to connect paddles. So they're sort of bumper paddles, left and right, red and blue paddles. And those paddles allow the ballot to be read in a yes or no format and the electors to mark their ballot using those prompts, yes or no. And then the same holds true for those persons with even greater limitations in their physical mobility. And we have the ability to connect what is called a sip and puff device. It's effectively a pneumatic sip and puff device that again is a yes and no prompt using the sip and puff device. We have that voting equipment this weekend at City Hall. We have it at every location next weekend during the other advanced poll weekend. And we have it at one location in every ward in the city on election day. And so that equipment is very much available and out there. I'm going to talk a little bit about why the equipment is important from the tabulation standpoint. When you get a ballot at a federal provincial election, you've got 5, 6, maybe 7 names on that ballot. Guelph is one single riding. And so the ballots that our friends at Elections Canada and Elections Ontario will deploy in provincial or federal elections, it's one ballot for the city of Guelph. Very simple. In the municipal election, we have 30 distinct ballot faces. So there are 6 wards in the city, as you all know, and there are 5 school support ballots in each of those wards. And so we have ballots for English public, English separate, French public, French separate, and non-school support ballots. And so the combination of those gives us 30 distinct ballot faces. On this coming weekend at City Hall, the what we call the revision and the ballot officers, they will be handing out and having to choose the correct ballot, obviously, for the electors that are before them and coming in amongst those 30 ballots. And so It's a very complex election in comparison to our federal and provincial brethren. But it certainly makes it interesting, and that those tabulators make it infinitely more more accessible for us on our end in terms of counting and tabulating results. And so they help us navigate the complexity of a composite ballot that has a race for mayor, a race for a specific ward, and a contest also for school board trustee. The complexity of the ballot doesn't stop there. You all know you can vote for one individual in the mayoral contest. You likely all know you can vote for two individuals in the councillor contest in each ward. In the Upper Grand District School Board contest, you might vote for one, you might vote for two, depending on which ward you live in. In the Wellington Catholic District School Board contest, so the English separate school contest, you actually vote for four trustees. So it is a very complex ballot and a very complex process in that regard. Excuse me, sorry. Another topic that Tanya mentioned that she wanted me to cover was logic and accuracy testing. So those tabulating equipment, they are effectively big calculators for us. And they do a lot of the heavy lifting for us at the end of the day on election day. But they have to be tested, obviously. We have to ensure and validate that the equipment is calculating and tabulating the results in the manner we expect and we require. And so in recent weeks, we tested all of the vote tabulators to confirm that they, again, read those marked ballots as intended. It involves, I can't overstate this enough. It's a significant amount of staff time and energy. It begins with a planned test matrix that we plan. It then leads to a sample deck of ballots that are intended to achieve the desired markings that match that test matrix. All the tabulators, as I said before, are tested to make sure that they read all the possible marking locations on the ballot. And as I said earlier, for those tabulators that are going to be used in advanced voting, they're required to read all of the city's 30 distinct ballot faces. And so the test decks that we use of ballots for example, those advanced voting tabulators are hundreds of pages, right? We're using a stack of ballots, a significant stack. The individual ward tabulators that we will use in specific wards obviously don't require us to use a full deck because we only have five different ballot faces in that given ward. But it does take a significant amount of time. We do use actual City of Guelph ballots. So obviously we've got all the ballots on site and with us ready to go for election day. We treat those ballots with a high degree of security. But we do use the actual ballots, obviously, to test the equipment and ensure accuracy. In total, I can tell you that it takes about a full week of time, staff time, Monday to Friday, and upwards of six staff sequestered at the time to do that work and run those that logic and accuracy testing. So it takes about half of the team offline for a full week just to get that equipment tested and ready. So again, a significant amount of energy. What I will say is we do ensure they are well coffeed. We also ensure they're well pizzaed so that they can sustain those full days.
May I just quickly, a question that comes to mind is Guelph chose not to do e-voting.
Yep.
So would you contrast the security of the tabulator versus e-voting?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the big difference is we have a paper ballot always in a tabulation process. We have a paper ballot and a vote by mail process, phone voting, internet voting. We can generate audit logs, but we don't have that hard copy. I mean, that's a simple fact. We get a lot of questions about whether that equipment can be tampered with as well. That equipment's not connected. The only thing that plugs into that equipment is a power cable. So it's not a data connection per se. When we do connect the audio tactile interface, the handheld audio tactile interface, we oftentimes get questions about, what are you plugging in? How are you plugging it in? What does that device have on it? That those are not connected devices in any way that exchange data over the internet. In some elections, the equipment that we use, and by some elections, I mean, I believe in the provincial exercise, the equipment that we use is the same as Elections Ontario, and it can be used to transmit results via modem. We do not exercise that opportunity. We're fortunate that Guelph is relatively small in terms of geographical size. We can get a team that's down in the south end at, I don't know, the Clara Road Emergency Center or the Bishop Mack High School. We can have them back at City Hall to drop their equipment off within an hour and 15 minutes of the close of their poll. You know, process the final electors that are in line, run the tapes, the results tapes. We do put those in up in the location so any candidates and scrutineers in the location can see the results from the equipment at that location. But we can get that equipment back really quickly. We don't have a need to modem or transmit that data over the internet. And so there's really no chance for the data on those machines to be transmitted or tampered with. And so I think that answers your question, Tanya.
Oh, yes, it totally does. Thank you. And I'll let you go on. Actually, I do want to just confirm. So I didn't know this. So the actual tabulation is done at the voting station?
And no.
Then, okay, please no, do explain
can,
that.
We can print a record. So the tabulators, what we do is when the staff begin at the voting location, they will run what is called a zero tape. So that zero tape, the machine fires up, it runs a zero tape, it confirms that no ballots have been cast. That zero tape is left on the machine. We print two zero tapes. One comes off, it's ripped off, and it's stuck on the wall. If you're in a voting location, or when you're in a voting location, look around, you'll see a long ribbon tape, kind of like the receipts that come out of the gas station pumps. I always tap my card and I get the receipt out of the gas pump. It's kind of like sort of that size. They'll be stuck on the wall somewhere. That's a zero tape. You'll be able to see the fact that this tabulator had zero results in the morning. Obviously, that's what we're looking for. We keep a second zero tape with the machine. And then we print at the end of the night a results tape. That results tape also is, so then we've got a zero tape, a results tape at the end of the day. That is ripped off. And that's part of our validation process. Part of our results validation and our tabulation is to take that physical tape that's stored by the staff. And then the second results tape is printed and it's stuck on the wall beside the zero tape from the morning. So you can see, you know, I'll use election day as an example. At 9:40 or 9:45, you know, 15, 20 minutes before poll opens, there's a zero tape. And then at the end of the day, you know, probably in and around the 8:30, if there was people in line waiting to continue to vote, 8:15, there would be a results tape that's printed and put up as well. That then, the tabulator then comes back to us at City Hall for tabulation. And I can sort of, maybe I'll jump to that because another question you had, Tanya, was sort of what happens after the polls? What's the sort of nuts and bolts of what happens after the polls? After the polls close. So as of 8 p.m. on October 24th, the city clerk's office team begins the tabulation process. And as we await those tabulators to come back to City Hall, we will begin tabulation and results reporting for returns that we've already received. And so the best example of those is going to be the mail-in ballots. We've received some mail-in ballots back already, and also from the city's what we call special voting location. So that's a term we use for sort of the various long-term care facilities and other such facilities around the city. Obviously, no results are reported until after 8 p.m., but we may begin the tabulation of things like the vote-by-mail kits in advance, depending on how many we receive. If we end up receiving thousands and thousands of vote by mail kits in the mail, they do take time for us to process. We've got to, maybe I can actually ask the question. Has anybody requested a vote by mail kit? No one's jumping up. Okay. They do require us to validate. So there is a declaration form that's required to be signed in the envelope. The ballot has to be placed within a secrecy envelope when it comes back to us. That mirrors the secrecy folder that you'll see us use on election day in-person voting. So it does take us time because there's a process. There's a separation of that information. There's a validation of the declaration, et cetera. And so if we were to wait till 8 o'clock with thousands of vote by mail kits, it would take us a significant amount of time. So we may begin that early depending on the volume we receive. Obviously the results are not reported publicly until after the polls close at 8 p.m.
May I just ask a quick question? Yep. Where are those ballots stored, the mail-in ballots?
Let's just say they're in City Hall. Maybe I won't tell you exactly where they are.
Okay, I guess really what I was asking is like
Fort Knox.
Are they stored in a safe?
Fort Knox room.
That's what I'm asking. Okay.
We got a Fort Knox room in City Hall. Yeah.
Thank you.
To be quite honest with you, behind double lock, very secured. I'll leave it at that. So we'll begin some of the tabulation in advance if we feel there's a necessary need to do that because of volume. And as we move past 8 p.m., we'll start to receive election staff from all the voting locations across the city. We're in a position when they arrive to support them in any final balancing or reconciliation that they may require in terms of their paperwork and their ballot counts. Or in the best case, we simply just receive back all of the individual locations' election supplies, including their tabulators and the results. And we send them off on their way and we thank them kindly and we tell them that their check's in the mail in a few weeks. And our aim is obviously to have results beginning to be reported as soon as possible after 8 p.m., hopefully to be completed no later than about 10:30 or 11 o'clock. So that's sort of how the evening progresses post-election and on election day. It's a lot of volume. We've got 45 plus locations. Each of those locations has what we term as a managing officer. Those managing officers are tasked with returning the equipment. And so City Hall is a bit of a buzz at, anywhere between, I'm going to say 8:15, 8:30, all the way through until about 10 o'clock as all of those locations return the equipment and supplies. And so that's election night.
Okay. I quickly wanted to ask if you could just quickly tell us about the Vote at Home pilot project.
Yeah, certainly. Where do we get the idea? The idea for this came from sort of, observing some of our other counterparts, some other municipalities, larger municipalities, Brampton, Toronto, I believe Mississauga perhaps offered this solution or this creative offering for election services. It's also offered federally and provincially through Elections Canada, Elections Ontario. But effectively, we do offer the ability to attend to someone's house and support them in their marking of a ballot in their own home. We are offering it as a pilot this time around. And our intent there is to sort of trial it, see how it works, see how the processes that we put in place match the expectations and the needs of the community. We are limiting it, obviously, for those that are physically unable to leave their home due to illness, disability, et cetera. And we also have to sort of manage the way that we offer the process in a way that's considerate of their disability. So it may involve Tanya as much as us simply appearing on the doorstep. We'll obviously be credentialed and people will well know we book times and appointments and preset times. And we may offer the individual their ballot on the doorstep and they can go inside and mark it. We may need to support them in the house. Not because there's a trust factor, but because we need to take care of our staff. We require them to check in when they're about to initiate a home visit pilot program voting session, and then check out with us over the phone when they're finished. So it's a logistical, I wouldn't say it's a challenge, but it takes a lot of energy to sort of think through the nuances of that. We're really happy to provide it. We've had some decent uptake on it. I will say a handful, 10 or 15 folks or so, which is good. That's sort of well within a manageable amount for us. And it's nice to be able to support people. What I will say too, is I've mentioned this before publicly. I don't know if it's because you know, most of my team are Guelph locals. Some are live outside of Guelph, but they're incredibly passionate about the work that they do. And in past elections, we've sort of done some of this in an ad hoc way. I can remember an election, I think it was 2014 in Guelph. I had a phone call from somebody on election day, and they said to me, can you guarantee that there is there's no latex in the voting location, like in my community? They obviously had family members that were allergic to latex. I later learned that it was a severe anaphylactic allergy to latex. And I said, no, I'm sorry, I can't. We wrap ballots in elastic bands. I said, unfortunately not, I don't think I can. And they asked if there was a special voting location that they could attend. And I said, well, I'm worried about, you know, your family members coming into any location and you know, having a risk of exposure and having some form of allergic reaction. So they drove to City Hall. I walked a ballot out to them in their car. They closed the back door of the van and marked a ballot. And I put it into a manila envelope and walked it back into City Hall. I popped it in the tabulator the ballot was cast, and I walked back out and I told them it was cast. I told them the timestamp that the machine would have logged their ballot cast, obviously validated their ID and everything to that effect, had to confirm that who they were on the voters list. But it's been experiences like that, Tanya, that I think has sort of led us to explore the home visit pilot program. But even in the absence of it, I don't think you could call Elections Ontario or Elections Canada, and now I'm bragging a bit, I don't think you could call either of those folks and get that same service. Whereas you could call the city clerk's office, and we're in the business of making sure people have the ability to vote and enfranchising that right to vote. And so I know that the team takes a lot of pride in that.
And that actually brings me to a question that has been asked with regards to scent-free spaces to vote. And I think I heard that there is a scent-free space in City Hall. That's at some correct. Point.
Yeah. So for individuals with scent sensitivities or, you know, chemical sensitivities, we're offering a voting location in City Hall. So we obviously have the voting location this weekend in City Hall. That offering, again, is a bit of a pilot. And so we're trialing it this weekend. Unfortunately, it is this weekend only because the only location where voting is occurring this weekend is at City Hall. So we have a greater degree of control over the facility. If any of you attend this weekend to vote at City Hall, you'll be voting in meeting room C, which is one of the lettered meeting rooms on the ground floor of City Hall. And then adjacent to that, we'll offer a room that is a scent-free environment. Everyone in that room and anyone supporting an elector in that room will be masked. And so that's another level of security and protection that some people may wish to avail themselves of. Mark a ballot, have a secrecy screen for you to mark your ballot in private. And then we can take that ballot and process it through the tabulator on their behalf. And the rooms where that's happening is adjacent. So they'll be able to see it to a certain degree. So.
Excellent. Yeah. I wanted to sort of go in a different direction right now. I have heard some rumblings about people getting the wrong voter cards, and especially yep. in areas where the boundaries have changed. And so, got a couple of questions. Who oversees the mailing of the voting cards? And the ward boundaries were changed officially as of December of 2021. Was there enough time to update who was in which ward?
Yeah, it's a great question. Yes, there is. There's no denying that we did have it was last week, late last week, we were made aware of some errors experienced for residents specifically along Waterloo Avenue. So Waterloo Avenue used to be the divide between Ward 3 and 5. Now Ward 3 has moved further south to the boundary that is the natural boundary that is the river, and so. It's the only spot that we experienced or we've noticed any issues. And so what we are doing is those that are impacted will receive a hand-delivered letter later this week, today or tomorrow. It will provide them with the proper Ward 3 voting card face, so they'll have the information they need. And we've had some of those individuals obviously call us and connect in with us. at the end of the day, all of those individuals are still eligible to vote. So getting a voter notification card does not make you eligible. It highlights to you that you're on the voters list and, you know, proverbially all your ducks are in a row, but there's no requirement for someone to have a voting card to vote. What we tell people is you don't have to bring your voting card. I will say my team would be giving me, you know, shooting daggers at me through their eyes right now if I said that out loud. We want people to bring a voting card if they have it. It certainly speeds up the process and makes it easier, but it is not a requirement. What is required are those three things I mentioned earlier: 18 years of age, Canadian citizen, owner, resident, tenant, or spouse of owner, resident, tenant in a property in Guelph, and a piece of ID. A piece of ID that shows your name and your qualifying address. That's all that's required to vote. So it is unfortunate. Who mails the voter notification cards? It's obviously handled by Canada Post, but the preparation of those cards, Tanya, is handled by the city. And so it must have been a pocket of properties that were not properly captured in the ward boundary change. They've been changed now. They are accurately reflected as living and residing in Ward 3. And I want to say it's less than 35 voters in total that we've been made aware of and we're aware of. And we spent a significant time over this past weekend looking at the other boundary or lines where the ward's boundaries used to be and validating that properties along those are accurate. And we have not found any other instances of irregularities in that sense.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that. And just to sort of jump into MPAC, I believe is MPAC is how we get the registry of voters, right? Would there be another way that you would prefer to register voters?
That's a very interesting question. I pause on it because some folks may have heard me talk about resourcing. So, I mean, I gave the example of the lodged and accuracy testing in terms of the resources because, you know, a lot of the decisions in the calculus we make around what we would do or what we wouldn't do, you know, flows around and stems from our ability to resource the election. And it's not so much, it is somewhat financial, but it's also people resources. MPAC, the challenge that and the concern I have with MPAC is their mandate primarily is assessment. They are the Municipal Property Assessment Corporation. So they assess property values in the province. That obviously supports our friends in our finance department for taxation purposes, et cetera. They have a mandate legislatively right now to also conduct simultaneously be responsible for enumeration. So they have a great property. They have a great understanding of properties in the province. Because the nature of their assessment business, they don't necessarily have a great sense of the people on those properties, their ages, the school support that they might default to or align with. And so it's an irregularity in their own right. And there may be some incongruency to their combined roles. Elections Ontario is taking over the voters list requirements. So they're developing a single list of electors voters list for the 2026 election. I'm not attempting to cast aspersions on Elections Ontario in any way, but I am cautiously optimistic. I admittedly take a long game approach to sort of evaluating whether or not there's success in these kind of things or not. And so we will see if Elections Ontario has a better go at it than perhaps MPAC has in the past. Many of my counterparts across the province complain greatly about the quality of the voters list in their communities. We've got about 105,000 electors on the voters list right now. We had to do about 2,000 what I'll call like general sort of routine data cleansing initiatives, like street name anomalies. The names of the streets were wonky. There were some other aspects that we do in terms of data cleansing, but you know, a couple thousand out of 105,000 wasn't all that bad. But we also chalk that up to really, really telling people to get on the voters list revision tools as they become available. validate your information, confirm it's accurate, update it if you need to. And aside from a short little week in September, that's been available since, I want to say, July-ish. So we've been pushing that messaging a lot, which I think helps ensure the list is as accurate as possible.
Okay, and that leads me to my next question. What if someone is of no fixed address? Can they vote, and how is that done?
Yeah, actually, Susan sent an email in. I can't remember, Susan, if it was last week or early this week. Days are blurring now. asking a related question. Yes, the answer is yes, they can. They reside in Guelph. They're 18 years of age. They're a citizen. They reside in Guelph. They can absolutely vote. We are working very closely with community partners to support individuals that may be unhoused or homeless. and so the process is, you know, it's obviously a bit unique and different. They may not have ID that shows their permanent address. So in that regard, they'll have to take an affidavit of residency. There's basically two forms. I'll leave it at that. A couple of forms they have to complete, take an affidavit, and then they would be provided a ballot. The place that they come to reside most frequently over the course of the last 5 weeks is the place that the legislation allows for us to quantify or qualify as their address. So that may be some of those community partner agencies that we've been working with, the locations of those facilities. It may be another location, but they can attest to that, and we'll issue a ballot accordingly in relation to where they live. We've worked with, again, those community agencies to ideally have those persons attend the city hall for this weekend. That gives us the ability, again, in a very sort of controlled space in a facility we know, and quite frankly, with the staff that have the really high level expertise to be able to offer those services.
Okay, thank you for that. I wanted to ask, it's a broad question. Why is it that property ownership is still the foundation of voting in a municipal election?
It's a great question, Tanya. And to be honest with you, my assumption, and it's merely assumption, is simply as you've noted, right? They have a right to be represented because they own property and they contribute to the sort of the property tax base, and so they're permitted to vote. There's not many opportunities for people. Actually, it leads to the next question. University students can vote at home, wherever home is, and in Guelph if they attend Guelph and if they live outside of Guelph. This is the one of the few instances where they can vote in multiple locations. Multiple communities. So that's kind of a unique decision. But yeah, I think it mostly comes back to, you know, they're obviously contributing to the property tax base. And that happens. I see the comment, and Morgan's spot on it. It's renters, it's homeowners, it's anybody. So I believe that's the foundation of it, but I will admit I don't have a complete understanding as to why.
Okay. Susan, I believe you have a comment about MPAC.
Yeah, just want to let it rip in terms of the MPAC list. So we, along with my family's voter registration cards, had a voter registration card arrive for a roommate we had 20 years ago. And more than a decade ago, I called up City Hall and I said, oh, this person no longer lives here, so you can take them off the list. And the clerk at that time, Lois Giles, said, oh no, you can't take someone off the list. Only they can take themselves off the list. Which means that the voters list is absolutely and completely bloated with people who no longer live here. And so in the case like of internet voting, if I knew this person's birthday, I could have requested an internet voting ballot and voted online without anyone ever knowing. And thank goodness that our process in Guelph to get a mail-in ballot requires that you submit ID. Because I'll give you another example. My son is attending university at McMaster. I had him go through the process on the voterlookup.ca MPAC process to register to vote in Hamilton, because he's entitled to vote there as well as in Guelph. There was no ID requirement to get on the MPAC list. And in Hamilton, there is no ID requirement once you are on the voters list to get a vote by mail ballot. So there is a mechanism in Hamilton to have a completely ID-free voting experience. So you could vote, you know, you could register Fluffy the cat under a pseudonym, you know, with a certain birth date and have it mailed to your house, and no one would ever be the wiser. The other thing with the MPAC list, because it's so bloated, I remember canvassing and going to houses where there would be like 8 people on the voters list and none of them lived any longer in the house. And so is the voter turnout really low in municipal elections, or is it just a percentage of a list that is completely, you know, inaccurate? And I get that probably door-to-door enumeration is expensive, but there's really a disconnect of haves and have-nots, that if you're a property owner, you're automatically on the list and you get a voter identification card. But if you're a tenant, then you are not enumerated unless you register yourself. So I think that the impact of voter list is an absolute and complete disaster and disgrace. And it's actually dysfunctional to the point that I think it puts the integrity of our democracy into question.
Thank you, Susan. I wanted to add to that. I know one of my cousins who has not lived in Canada for years, continues to receive a voter card at his parents' house. And one of my other cousins also receives a voter card. Now, this is for federal elections, I should clarify, I apologize. So this is a problem, I would think, on all levels of government. Stephen, did you want to?
Yeah, I mean, I think you might be right. It's and Susan makes a great point. Door-to-door enumeration is probably the way to go in an ideal way. Heavily resource intensive. The currency, like any list, is something that I think election authorities have to contemplate when they consider door-to-door enumeration. It is a very challenging prospect and a very challenging project to sort of deliver upon. But I agree. I mean, having the ability to go door to door and validate that, and then have an election sort of the next day, that would be the most accurate list. But again, the fluidity of residency, regardless of where you are, is such a challenging component of it. I mentioned that I am challenged a little bit by the duality of the role of MPAC, both assessment and enumeration. I'm again cautiously optimistic about Elections Ontario, because at least their only mandate is enumeration. they're not challenged by that other requirement. I am very concerned about Elections Ontario's ability to understand school board support. We run elections, and I always say it, it's the municipal and school board election. So the reason why we have 30 different ballot faces is because we've got 6 wards and 5 different ballot faces that support the difference is in education support that a specific elector would have. That's new. That's brand new for Elections Ontario. They've never had to deal with that, ever. In the history of their voters list, they've never had to deal with it. So that sort of eludes, I think, hopefully the group can sort of sense, you know, my cautious optimism. But it's like sort of wading into water where I don't know when it's going to drop off. I'm wading into the lake and I'm not sure when the shelf's going to drop off and the ground's going to go up from below me. Optimistic. I'm a pretty good swimmer. But so in that sense, I'm a little bit challenged. Tenants are still on the voters list, you know. So yes, MPAC is much... I believe that MPAC is well suited at managing home ownership and how homeowners are tied to the list. They do it's not to say that the tenants are not, or renters are not included on the list. They absolutely are. To Susan's point, the accuracy of that, I mean, we wait to see. Susan's comments about no ID in Hamilton. Just happy that we asked for it here in Guelph, that's for sure. That's an area where I think we can exercise some individual policy and procedure, and we've certainly done that. Okay. And then the final thing I was going to mention is, you know, the ability to add oneself to the voters list. Yes, we can add individuals to the voters list. We obviously can't remove people. Like, I can't take Tanya's word to remove. I'm just looking at some of the faces here. I can't take Tanya's word to remove Gordon. I need Gordon to tell me he wants his name to be removed and how he's moved and update his information, et cetera. But it's challenging to say the least, certainly.
Absolutely. And just along that same vein, what if someone just moved into Guelph? And the specific question in the chat was someone who moved here from Newfoundland and is looking for a job. Can this person vote in this election? Because they've been told that they must have lived here for 3 months.
No. The answer to that is absolutely no. They can absolutely vote. There's no timed residency requirement or anything to that effect. Their best bet is to, what I would suggest they do is check out guelph.ca/vote. We've got a list. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it's 26 or 27 distinct possible ID pieces of ID that they can bring. Again, remember, the ID we need is a piece of ID with the individual's name and their qualifying address in Guelph. So they may not have a driver's license right now or an Ontario photo card because of, you know, our good friends at MTO and such might take a little while to get on those things and get it back to them. That's also a good public service announcement. Make sure if you move, you change your ID promptly so that you've got that in your pocket. But there's things there like utility bills. There are things there like, I mean, sometimes when people move, they need to update their cable TV package, and that requires a change with Rogers or Bell. And so they potentially could have that kind of ID. We even accept letters from the university, right? And students are on campus. The university will auto-generate a letter to say that they live on campus. That's proof of ID. If you look at that list, again, it's pretty exhaustive. It's 26 or 27 pieces of ID that you can walk into a voting location with. So we tell people for sure, it does not have to be photo ID. We do not need a photo. It's your name and your qualifying address. A lot of people love to bring a passport because that proves my citizenship. We cannot accept passports. Passports do not have your qualifying address on it because you handwrite your address in. If you look at your passport, I think it's page 3, you write your own address in. Do it in pencil if you do, so you can erase it if you move. But because it's not issued with the ID, it's not acceptable.
Thank you, Stephen.
Yep.
So there's another question. Can a resident who also owns a business in Guelph vote once or twice, say in 2 different wards? Now,
you can only vote once. I mean, that's the simple calculus. You can only vote once. Like I said, the few people that can do this are students, right? They can vote. They can vote at home in their home municipality and here in Guelph. But the principle of one person, one vote remains, you know, except for very, very narrow circumstances, like I just mentioned.
With regards to people that do not have, say they've just moved to Guelph, yeah, and they do not have any of that information that you mentioned, like a new cable, the contract or whatever, I'm assuming that the way that they can vote is similar to the way that a person that has no fixed address can vote via affidavit. Okay.
Yeah. And again, we ought to do this. The staff are trained to this level. We will do our best to ensure that someone can present a piece of ID on that list. Again, that list is fairly exhaustive if you look at it. It's actually nice to see that it's that exhaustive. We will really encourage someone to be able to sort of attempt to produce that ID. Obviously, we're not going to turn someone away. It's best for us if we have that piece of ID. It helps us validate it. But yes, you're right, Tanya. They could follow the same process of swearing of an affidavit, taking of an oath, and then that would permit them to vote. We're obviously not going to encourage them to go and get another piece of ID and then come back, especially if it's near the end of the day. If we hear something like, "Well, I just live around the corner, but I forgot this ID at home. Can I just take that oath?" We might say, "Listen, the line's small right now. Could you go and get that ID and come on back?" But I keep the message I've been asking our training staff to deliver to the people that work with us is We are in the business of enfranchising people to cast their ballot. That is our role. So if it's end of day and the line is big, don't send someone home to get a piece of ID. They can take the affidavit. They need to understand the significance of that. And we will make sure when we give affidavits and then get someone to take an oath that they fully understand the significance of that and the ramifications of that. They can do the same thing as you said, an individual who's unhoused or homeless.
Okay, thank you. So I've received a lot of questions with regards to students that live in residence. Do they receive voter registration cards? How is that dealt with? Because many students don't know that they are entitled to vote here.
Yeah, and so in terms of they don't know, again, if we spend a lot of energy working with our various partners, community agencies around that support the homeless or those that are unhoused, we spend an equal amount of time working with community agencies and partners like long-term care facilities, and we spend equal amount of energy or more working with the university to communicate with them so that students understand their ability to vote and their right to voting wealth. Our challenges, like long-term care, we find the university's student population in a four-year period turns over. So if you were in your first year of university in 2018 and you lived in residence, chances are you may actually be finished university in 2022. But you likely at that point, not always, but you likely do not live in residence. So you may have been added to the voters list as living in, you know, Maritime Hall in on the University of Guelph, on campus of University of Guelph, but you're no longer there. So we unfortunately see that those electors are removed from the data we get from MPAC. So too, unfortunately, are some folks in long-term care facilities because the nature of the facility that they're in. They are fully able to vote students. We communicate heavily with them. The piece of ID they can use is that is issued by the university in terms of their residency qualifications. We have a voting location on campus next weekend. So one of the six locations in Guelph is on the campus of U of G and Peter Clark Hall in the lower level of the University Center. We also have a location on election day. The university is in Ward 5. One of the locations, actually Ward 5 has a couple of additional voting locations. One of the reasons is because the U of G is located within Ward 5. And so we have a voting location there. So, and heavily involved with their communications teams to, if you've been on campus, you'll see it on digital signage boards. You've seen our ads in the Ontarian newspaper. We're getting as much as we can them to go on to guelph.ca/vote and add themselves. And to Susan's point, if you're using our tool now to add yourself to the voters list, you do have to present ID to add yourself to the voters list.
Okay, thank you, Stephen. I'd like to sort of throw it open to the floor if anyone has any more questions.
Susan had a question there about when is it purged. Did I read that right, Susan? At one point, it probably was. It's cleansed. I don't know about updated, Susan. In my experience, we don't get a whole lot of resident data. There's not a lot of people that live at 50 Stone Road East. If you look in the voters list, we will have more by the time we're finished. We will pass that information off to MPAC. MPAC will have that information. Again, we don't maintain a voters list between election years because MPAC has the duty and, again, the statutory authority to enumerate. So when we get the voters list back, in our experience, most, if not all, electors that live at 50 Stone Road are no longer on the voters list.
So the thing I wanted to say is I would really like, between the city and MPAC, I really would like to see a better job done of that at some point in the future, because the university has a list of all of the students who are in residence, you know, as of September. They have something that's really updated. And I would really like to see that either go into the MPAC database or into the city database, and then that students receive a voter registration card. Because that, you know, it lands in your mail, there it is, like it tells you, you know, where your voting location is, what the hours are, like it gives you that information. And you know, we really, you know, I think in a situation where voter turnout is plummeting in a really disturbing way. We saw that in the provincial election. It dropped down to 44%, you know, to the point that it really starts to compromise the integrity of our election. And so I think it's critical that we get young adults voting out of the gate, and that we instruct and engage and show them that municipal elections matter and how to get engaged. So, you know, I actually think it's a long-term issue.
More of you, Susan. Like we need to engage that group in a far greater way. There are a couple of challenges, and I'm going to sound like a broken record, because I'm sure you're probably used to hearing this too. The privacy aspect is a big challenge for us. We have, for example, long-term care facilities that take an awful lot of convincing and energy for them to share their voters list with us. And it's under the guise and auspices of it's private data, it's confidential, I can't provide that to you. You know, I can't give you name, address, and date of birth because of privacy requirements and PHIPAA and these kind of things. And I get to the point, I don't mind sharing this with this group, I get to the point where I say, listen, we live and breathe privacy in the city clerk's office in Guelph. We're responsible for supporting the FOI and access to information process under MFIPA municipally. I'm doing this for the sole purpose. I will sign an affidavit that it's only to be used for election purposes, whatever the case may be. We need it for the administration of elections. And we run up into a lot of pushbacks in that regard. Now, that being said, I'm sure to Susan's point, we could do that. We actually contemplated, Susan, in advance of, you know, at come the September time this year. We are not for the only reason, but a significant reason is we're waiting to see if that transition to Elections Ontario's list and data brings a change to the quality of that voters list data. So we'll wait and see. And then the final thing is, we've thought about drops in the residents' mailboxes. We've set up a table during orientation week, right when students are on campus. They're inundated with information in that first week. They're trying to sip water through a fire hose during that first week of orientation. And so I don't think we got a lot of traction with those exercises. We're happy to try it again, happy to do it again. We had a table set up and it was like, you know, do I need your information at this table? Are you a bus pass? Can I buy my textbooks from you? And if the answer was no to any of those questions, they moved on, right? And I get it. It's a busy time for new students. That's not an excuse. That's not to say we shouldn't be exercising, you know, a great degree of effort to sort of, engage that group. But we're doing a lot of that. We're, you know, advertising through Instagram and TikTok and many of the social media platforms that not all students use those platforms, but many do. Digital signage across the university, ads in the Ontarian, as I said, like the list is quite deep. But we've attempted, it's a great question, comment, Susan. We've had tables there the first week. We've had tables there in the middle, early part of October. They're just a busy group of folks. I was a student once. I would have picked up the information, but that's the way I'm wired, I think. So it's a tough nut to crack, but we keep trying. And again, I hope maybe the transition to Elections Ontario's list might help us in terms of the quality of the data we get from
the university. Stephen, I wanted to thank you. I think we've covered a lot of the questions that were sent to me and to and via the chat. Thank you so much for your very clear responses. Thank you for your diligence with regards to enfranchising voters. I think that's very important and we appreciate it.
Yeah.
If you have any closing remarks that.
No, I just really briefly, first of all, thanks again for having me. Always happy to come out and have a chat with any number of different groups. We've done a few of these, which has been great. We've been on CFRU and our own podcast and a few other podcasts. So we're happy to do these things. If you know of other opportunities where we can get out and share information like this, please do let us know. The final message I've been giving is obviously get out and vote. I don't think I need to tell anybody here. You're obviously interested and engaged. So get out and vote, whether it's this weekend, next weekend, or on the 24th. If you're looking to do vote by mail, get on it today, please. Please give your time. I can't control Canada Post. I'd love to be able to at this time of year. But if you need that and you want that, please get yourself registered to receive a vote by mail kit. And the final thing I'll say is, if you're going to vote, to Susan's comment about dropping voter turnout, please bring somebody. Make it an event. Go get a coffee beforehand. Go get a coffee afterwards. Help a family member with a grocery shopping pickup after voting. Bring somebody. Bring a friend. Bring a young person who's, you know, 16 or 17 and on the cusp of voting. Next time around, they'll be able to vote. Bring your kids that are younger than that, if you have them. Bring grandkids. Bring anybody, preferably someone that's eligible to vote, because the more the merrier. And we certainly want that. Big turnout. I ordered 130,000 ballots for 105,000 electors. So I got more than I need. I can have every person that's eligible to vote in Guelph vote. There will be no problems with that. I would love to use all of those. I do not want to shred them after the election. Bring a friend, have fun. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, so there is an election forum at 10C in person, and candidates will be answering questions with regards to the Sustainable Development Goals. Wednesday, October the 12th, wards 4, 5, and 6 will be there. It is 4 to 6 p.m. in person. And if you Google Eventbrite Guelph Municipal Election Forum, you can get tickets to this free event. The mayoral debate is happening in person on October the 11th at 7 p.m. And it's at Dublin Street Church on the corner of Dublin and Suffolk. So 68 Suffolk Street West. You can have your say about the Guelph Reformatory District. Please check out the open house recording, take the survey, provide comments, and the deadline for this is October the 13th. I'd like to let you all know about the Crane Park Community Bridge. The abutments for the new bridge are complete, and now it's time to fundraise to complete the bridge. This is a 50th anniversary legacy project led by the Guelph Hiking Trail Club. It's a community-led, city-supported alternative model of completing projects that are not necessarily a top city priority. So please go to guelphhiking.com to help build intuitive, seamless connections between Guelph's open spaces. Next week on Breezy Breakfast, we will have a federal update with RMP Lloyd Longfield. And the Breezy Breakfast schedule for the next few weeks, next week, October the 20th, there will be no show. And October the 27th, which is the Thursday after the election, we will have a post-election post-mortem. Thank you very much for everyone for attending, and we'll see you on the 27th for a post-mortem. So get out and vote, people. Bye.
Thanks for joining us today. Music is provided by Juice Germ. I'm Jiayu, and I produce this podcast.